All right, welcome to Free Sources. A missionary was visiting a church and gave a stirring presentation of the needs on the mission field and the need for a teacher. He begged that someone, surely someone in a room full, all these wealthy Americans, surely there was at least one who could commit to several years on the mission field. The need was staring them straight in the face. He actually offered for a raise of hands. Anyone volunteer? There were none. After the service, he was in the back of the auditorium and shaking hands with people, and along comes this young man in a wheelchair. He said, "Sir, I don't think you saw me in the back there. I'm willing to go." The missionary says, "Youngster, you've only got one leg." The young man said, "How many two-legged people volunteered?" I would like for you all to stand on one leg. How many of you would be willing to teach a school year one-legged? Thank you. You may be seated. One of my favorite poets, Edgar A. Guest, wrote a poem called Equipment. "Figure it out for yourself, my lad. You've all that the greatest of men have had. Two arms, two hands, two legs, two eyes, and a brain to use, if you would be wise. With this equipment they all began, so start for the top and say, 'I can.' Look them over, the wise and great. They take their food from a common plate. And similar knives and forks they use. With similar laces they tie their shoes. The world considers them brave and smart, but you've all they had when they made their start. You can triumph and come to skill. You can be great if only you will. You're well equipped for what fight you choose. You've legs and arms and a brain to use. And the man who has risen great deeds to do began his life with no more than you. You are the handicap you must face. You are the one who must choose your place. You must say where you want to go. How much will you study the truth to know? God has equipped you for life, but he lets you decide what you want to be. Courage must come from the soul within. The man must furnish the will to win. So figure it out for yourself, my lad. You were born with all that the great have had. With your equipment, they all began. Get hold of yourself and say, 'I can.'" That is the heart of this presentation. The goal this afternoon is to identify pre-existing sources of wisdom, inspiration, ideas for first-year teachers. Are you totally inexperienced? How many of you feel totally inexperienced this afternoon? Remember if you feel totally inexperienced? Good. It's good for you to feel inexperienced. However, I want to build you up during this 45 minutes. How many of you went to school? For how many years? 8, 9, 10 maybe? So, you have experience at school, right? Anyone here under the age of 17, aside from the little munchkin in the back there? No. So, each of you probably has at least 8 years of school experience, plus 17, 20 maybe 25 years of experience at life. You may feel inexperienced, but you're not totally inexperienced. You're not totally unequipped, okay? Think back to your school days with me. What are some things that you appreciated about your teachers? Now, don't. I know I caught you a little off guard, so I'll keep talking for a little bit, just to give you a hint. All right. I can remember two of my teachers distinctly. One I told you about earlier, was a rather emotional teacher, I'll just be honest. She had a short fuse, but her willingness to apologize after she flew off the handle meant as much to me as the fact that occasionally she did fly off the handle. And I could tell you very few things that she taught me, but I knew one thing. Never was a doubt in my mind after that day that she walked out there and pulled me out of a bush. It was that she loved me, and she still does. Every now and then she sends me a letter or something. She still loves me. Her sister, who was one of my other teachers, was one of these people who has a perfectly level head. You know, you could spray her with a garden hose, and she would say, please spray it somewhere else. That type of person, you know? Just calm as they come. And I appreciated that about her. Two totally different people with very different skill sets, very different talents. And yet, I learned to appreciate both of their strong points. Okay, you're up. What are some things you appreciated about your teachers? Okay, if it's worth doing it all, it's worth doing it right. And that wasn't any too early to learn that. Second grade. I'd say they should have started that in first grade, but hey, that's okay. Preschool's even all right, you know. So, okay. Anyone else?
One thing one of my teachers did is wrote me a note and said they admired it. They something about the media they liked, and just, I don't know. It was like a upbuilding note or whatever.
Yes.
And I still remember it meant a lot to me then. So.
Very good. So a teacher who wrote you an upbuilding, encouraging note. Very good. Very good. Anyone else? You don't have to tell me things right now, but I would like to give you an assignment. That is that you think about your school days. Write down the things that you appreciated in your school teachers and aspire to do that this coming school year. Okay? We're going to go right into the things I would like to present to you. Our takeaway for today is use your God-given resources. That poem, you've all that the greatest of men have had. You have some resources. Some of the resources are people. It's the first one that we need to talk about. Number one, God. You may not think of God as a person, but I think as a school teacher, God has become a very real person to me. Someone that I want to have a conversation with every morning and then some. The parents. And by the way, they are on your side. They are scary. It is almost a law. It's not one of the seven laws of teaching. But it's almost a law that parents are scared of teachers and teachers are scared of parents. Okay? The fact of the matter is that we both have the child's good in mind. And the sooner that you open up communication with the parents of your school children, the better. Right? It's much better to have a relationship with them before there's a problem at school. All right? For the first communication to be, Sally is failing. That's not the foot you want to get off on. So, go ahead and start communicating with them sooner rather than later. Your school board. Your school board is like an umbrella. I appreciated what Brother Neil was talking about, that authority structure. Let them stay over you. Okay? I had the privilege of asking my school board, what have I done wrong as a teacher? And one of them very bluntly said, Jen, you have a tendency to run ahead. It was good for me to be told that. Told, you know what? I need to back off and go at the school board's pace. And I will just tell you something, a big secret about school boards. They're pokey. But there's a reason for that. It's because they don't want to make the wrong decision. Okay, so when you have $1 million idea and you go to your school board and they say, we'll talk to you next week, and next week rolls around and they still haven't talked to you yet, just hold the brakes. Okay, it might only be worth a penny. All right. The church. Ephesians 4 verse 11 lists teachers as a gift to the body of Christ. But I think the church is also a gift to you. Accept the support that they give you. And be a firm supporter. of the church. Now, the local body, wherever you're going to be teaching, if it's far away from home, try to support the church where you're teaching at. Co-teachers. Many of you will have co-teachers. Co-teachers are like salt and pepper. So you have $1 million idea, and they dump a little salt on it and bring it back down to a $10 idea. Or sometimes when you become slightly boring, they might add a little bit of spice to your life. Co-teachers are an excellent resource for you. My first year of teaching, I was in the process of reacting to a situation that had happened in the church I had been in the year before. And so because of this, I wasn't talking to my co-teachers. In fact, I think I went almost 6 weeks without talking to my co-teachers, more than good morning and good afternoon. And thankfully, they recognized that this was not going to work. And one afternoon, they came to my schoolroom and got right up in front of me and sat down. Obviously, this was not going away. And they said the four words that strike fear in the heart of every man. They said, "We need to talk." And we did. Please talk to your co-teachers. Communication is important. All right. What are the person that is extremely valuable to you is yourself. All right. You have memories. You had a childhood. Tell your own stories. Talk about your own school days. If you want your children's attention, the class table, they're staring out the window or something, just kind of in a calm, quiet voice say, "You know, when I was in school," trust me, you will have their attention. Or, you know, "When I was your age," or whatever. Let them know what happened when, as you were mature in your teen years, mistakes that you made, whatever. Tell them family stories. I've enjoyed hearing some family stories. Someone's father, mother, things that happened to them. Tell them what happened to your mom and dad. Those are sources that you already have. All right? God has already primed you for teaching. By the way, God knew that you were going to teach this year before you were born. Did you ever think about that? Okay. So He has been priming you, sticking stories and backgrounds in you that will help you teach the children that He's planning on giving you. He even knew which children you're going to have. He knew what books you're going to use. He's been preparing you. Trust me. Use those things that He did to prepare you. Your experiences. You know, God did this with Moses and David. What did Moses and David both have to do before either of them could become a leader? Both of them, they had to wait. Yes?
Shepherds.
They were both shepherds. That's right. I don't know how many of you have taken care of sheep? Anybody? Well, very good. We've got some shepherds in here. God's been at work. I'm impressed. Maybe your sheep, you know, were a little different looking. Maybe they were puppies. I don't know. But God has a way of preparing people. If I had a little more time here, I would ask for what you did before being asked to teach. I know some of you worked in bakeries. Now, trust me, that's very good experience. Now, I hope I can tell you more about why that's good experience later. Places you've been. How many of you have been outside the United States? That is valuable experience for a teacher. Okay? I've been to San Marcos, Honduras, and there's a picture of the church house in San Marcos, Honduras, in the 6th grade rod and staff history book, and I always enjoy getting to that lesson, telling the school children I went to church there. Twice. People you've met. I've had the privilege of being in a room like this under the teaching of Lester Showalter when I was preparing to teach my first year, and some of the school books we use, he was at least a partial writer, and so on. How many of you have ever experienced a failure in your life? Okay. Jonathan raised both hands. I think he's aware of more than one. I didn't know what it is about it, but children just, they love to know that you blew it. Okay? And I think there is something to it that that if you're willing to share a mistake that you made with your children in a redeeming way, it can prevent them from making the same mistake. Right, be careful how you do it. Don't glorify what you did wrong. But when I tell my students about the time that I cheated, and then how I lied about it, and how my teacher spanked me twice, once for cheating and once for lying, and how my papa kept up the music when I got home, and how I could barely sit for a week. This puts the fear of God in them about attempting the same thing. It's okay to tell them about that. Talk about victories, things that happened that were victorious. Accidents. Have any of you ever been to Lamp and Light? A few people? You know that big mountain out behind there? Okay, I fell down that mountain. Alright. And my children love to hear that story. Misconceptions that you had growing up. My father used to think that in the song "My Country Tis of Thee I Sing," he thought that it meant that we have a country that has icing. Okay? And that's what makes the United States so great. We get icing on our cakes. And I was one of these people who had a misconception. And I think it was in fifth grade before I found out that a spouse is not a furry creature with a long tail. It's okay to tell your students about that. It makes you a human. Okay? And they realize that it's okay if they don't know what a word means, and so on. And just by the way, mine is not furry, nor does she have a long tail. Right. Your ideals, your vision. I hope each of you has a clear vision of why we have Christian schools. If you don't, get one. Okay? Your students will find out within the first week or so whether you do, and if you do, what it is. Okay? I challenge you. Read a little bit of history, enough to get a vision. Ask someone who's elderly enough to remember starting a Christian school or possibly going to a public school. Find out what's the purpose. It's very important to have a vision. Otherwise, you won't get where you're trying to go if you don't know where you're going. Okay, I remember hearing about a boy who was learning how to kick footballs. And his coach was walking down the sideline, and he kicked a football and hit the coach in the head. And the boy said, "I'm sorry, I wasn't aiming for you." And the coach said, "You weren't aiming, that's for sure." You got to pick a spot, and then that's where you're going to kick. And so the same goes for teachers. You need to pick a spot. Pick a vision. Have a vision. Have a godly worldview. Confidence in God. Things will go wrong during your school year, whether they're in your classroom or outside of your classroom. Recently we had a fire that actually burnt right up to the schoolhouse and burnt a number of the children's playthings and so on. That was a wonderful opportunity for me to teach them what I believe about material possessions. Just how valuable are they or unvaluable. Publishers, the people who wrote these textbooks, have support people like Brother Jonathan. They are there specifically for first-year teachers like yourself. It's okay to pick up the phone and call them and ask them, "How am I supposed to teach this material?" It's okay to say, "What were you thinking?" Right? Sometimes that feedback is very helpful for them when they're doing revisions and so on. Most of you already have family, set of parents. I wouldn't go to them necessarily with school problems, but don't fail to stay in touch with your parents. They can share wisdom with you as parents. Just because some of you will be teaching school away from home, you may still need your father's and mother's advice occasionally. Right? And many of you will be leaving friends to go teach somewhere else. Keep your friends. You'll still need them. And once again, you don't need to share school subjects with them, but to be a rounded person, maintain your friendships. Be temperate in that. I don't want to find out that you were all texting all the way through your school year because I said you're supposed to maintain your friendships, but do keep your friends. Any questions about people that are resources for you? If not, we're going to go on to books. Teachers use lots of books. You should handle them like a master carpenter handles a hammer. the books will not teach your students. You are going to have to teach your students. The number one book is the Bible. One of the gifts that we have in this country is the freedom of teaching our own children in a Christian setting. I think it is a crying shame if our Bibles go without getting opened for even one day. All right, I feel very strongly about that. Now, if you don't open the Bible, but you do quote Scripture, I think I could keep you from feeling guilty. I don't want you to feel guilty. That's not what I'm trying to do here. But be aware that it is a privilege that we have that just might go away. So let's not waste the time that we have with an open Bible at this point. Teacher's guides. Please read the part of the teacher's guide that says, to the teacher. It will save you many moments of time. I think Jonathan will probably tell you that again. That's just fine. All right? Because it's important that you do that. Handbooks. This is an excellent handbook. If your school has one, learn how to use it. This is not a book you sit down and read. Please don't even try. Okay. However, if you're wanting to know how to set up a plan book, this one has some good ideas. Right? It even has a part in here to first-year teachers. Okay, and so on. There's another book here that Brother Jonathan's going to go over. I'm just briefly going to mention the Seven Laws of Teaching. If you don't have a copy of it, I highly recommend it. Reference books. There are three words that every teacher is going to need to learn how to say very, very well. Because your children will try to use you as a reference book. They will raise their hand and say things like this. What does suspend mean? And rather than saying it means whatever, you should say three words. Do you know what they are? Anybody?
Get the dictionary.
Get the dictionary? Very, very, very close. Right idea. Look it up. All right? So when they say, what does suspend mean? You say, look it up. Let's practice this a little bit, okay? What is Hawaii's state flower?
Look it up.
Very good. How far is it from here to New York?
Look it up.
What book would you use for those two, by the way?
Look it up.
That was a trick question, by the way. The first one would be an encyclopedia, the second one an atlas. All right. We're going to try this again. How many Jameses are there in the Bible? Okay, which book would you use to look it up?
Concordance.
Concordance? You get close. I would recommend a Bible dictionary. You need to get familiar with these kinds of questions and these kinds of books. One that we would look in a concordance is which verse mentions the word success?
Look it up.
Look it up. Thank you. Very good. Periodicals, read them. Read the Christian School Builder or whatever you get. Blackboard Bulletin. Those are inspirational. Use your local library with discretion, but there are times that it is fitting for you to go get a book, for example, about honey. Right? Your school probably doesn't have one. Your local library most likely does. And a dedicated book about honey could broaden your understanding and help you teach more effectively. And I highly recommend that you, if you use the Google, that you use the internet with great discretion. Trying to find information on the internet is kind of like trying to get a drink from a fire hydrant. Okay? Yeah, you might get some water, but you're very likely mostly just going to get wet. Right? I'm not telling you not to use it at all, but if you use it, please use it with great discretion. Any questions about books that are available to teachers and other reference sources? If not, we're going to move on to objects. I hope that you recognize all the things on this table. If you don't, I'm going to explain them to you. All right? You're familiar with most of these things. Did Jesus use objects to teach? I have a question. When did Jesus not use objects to teach? That would be the harder one to answer, okay? He used objects repeatedly. Why should we think that we would teach any differently from the way he did? All right, so The number one object in your classroom that you should use, aside from your books, is this. Use your board. Whether it's a whiteboard, blackboard, whatever you have, please use the board. By the way, does anyone know what this drawing up here is?
Snail?
Good guess. Anyone else?
Say what? It's a Mexican man riding a horse.
Yes, it's a Mexican man riding a horse. See, there's the horse's head and his tail, and he's wearing a sombrero. Thank you, Conrad. Appreciated that. Right. You do things like that. Use your board. It attracts student attention and keeps them going. This is a very familiar piece of schoolroom equipment. It's a piece of paper. I have a question. How many pieces of paper, your students and yourself should probably be familiar with this, right? How many pieces of paper would it take to cover a 12-inch globe? Sounds familiar. We know how big a piece of paper is, but, okay. I'll let you figure that out. And how many pieces of paper would it take to cover a 12-inch cube? Very good. I'll let you figure it out. Okay. You're supposed to come, teachers. And if you don't know what else to do with paper, you can turn a piece of paper into a paper airplane and test aerodynamics. See? So paper. Very useful. Now, this, you all know what this is, right? Anybody?
Pencil.
World's best calculator. Has no limits in how big a numbers you can put into it. All right. And it has one of these wonderful things on the other end, right there. Anyone know what that is? A delete button. Okay. All right. You could use pencils to do all sorts of wonderful things, aside from just writing. Your class table. I'd like you ladies over here to just reach out and touch it. All right, so answer a few questions now. Is it rough or smooth?
Rough.
Rough. Is it wet or dry?
Dry.
Is it cold or hot?
Kind of cold.
Kind of cold. Okay. When you're teaching these things, use familiar objects. Your students are the class tables, like, they come up here and sit at it, and suddenly they realize you can learn things. If you have a wooden class table, you can, talk about how many years old the tree was. Someone by counting the tree rings, so on. Use familiar things. Use their lunches. For example, this is one
banana.
One what banana?
Whole.
Whole banana. Very good. Okay, I need four volunteers. All right. So I'm going to pick the two young ladies right there in the back and the two young men right across the room. If you all would come forward. This is one whole banana, right? All right, now, each of these is one
half.
Half, that's right. Now, would you each please take a napkin? Thank you. All right, and now we're going to cut each of those. Now, each of those pieces is one quarter. Quarter. Now, you can please unpeel those. And do you all know how to split a banana into thirds? Now, just for the rest of you, all God made bananas for teaching fractions. Okay, it must be missed what was happening here. All right, fractions taste like bananas. If they divide each of these into the three pieces that a banana naturally divides into, then each of those little pieces is one quart of a banana. 1/12. That's right. If that doesn't work, you can try to put your finger in the end of it just a little bit. This one's a little too soft. Sorry. You don't have to eat that piece. That's okay. All right. Now, if each of you would just eat one piece, and the rest of you, how much of the banana is left?
75%.
75%. Y'all agree with that?
No.
No. Hey, see, we've got some good stuff going on here. How much of the banana is left?
Two-thirds
of that banana is left. Each of you may eat one more piece. All right. Now how much of the banana is left?
One-third.
All right. And then the three of you that still have a piece, go ahead and eat your one piece that's left. If you don't mind, I'm just keeping that one up. And how many pieces are left now? One. She still has a piece. Just so you know. There's one.
12.
Thank you. You all may sit back down. You're very welcome. I hope you all like bananas. My children typically do. Although I was chopping so many bananas, I ended up using Kit Kats as well, so that there was some variety in the classroom. Brother Jonathan, what does this have to do with the teaching of sphere?
It's round.
It's round. But what happens if you...
make a hemisphere.
You cut it in half and you make it a hemisphere? And what is... what shape is one side of a hemisphere? The flat part of it. It is a
circle.
And so if we cut this thing in half, we have two hemispheres, and you would cut a piece of paper that is the shape of that circle, it would take exactly four of them to cover the outside of this. Okay. You can actually do that with an orange. Cut it in half. Put it on a piece of paper. Trace it. Cut it up. And your four pieces. Something about eating attracts children's attention. Getting their lunch boxes and chopping a sandwich into four pieces to teach fractions, whatever it takes. Food is something children, and most likely you, are familiar with. You can teach volume by using a yogurt cup and so on. So don't be scared of using their lunches or using food to teach your students. One of the things that one of my co-teachers my first year used to teach division was a very common school property object called
rocks.
She just brought some rocks into the classroom, and then the students started learning that 6 divided by 2 equals
3.
And somehow when the children could actually handle the rocks, see what's going on, they learned division. Okay. I'm serious to doubt any of you will be bereft of rocks at your location. And they don't have to be big ones. I've actually had students who kept a little pile of rocks in their desk, and they would use them until they learned the new concept, whatever it was. A clock. And for those of you teaching lower graders, go ahead and stick those numbers, the 2 zeros at the top, the 15 at the 3, the 30 at the 6, and the 45 at the 9, and so on. That's very helpful for children. I know for you and I, we think, oh, well, that's so elementary. Yes, it's elementary. If you're teaching elementary students, do elementary things for them. Okay. So use the clock. Use coins. Rather than saying how many nickels and so on, coins are, when children actually hold the money in their hands, and I actually normally keep some bills in there, up to a $100 bill, during the school year, because my children, once they handle those things, as they really do count the change back to me, there's something that goes on in the brain. They learn and understand much better.
$2.86,
because they had a gold dollar and a silver dollar in there. And so, and if you watch it, you actually will get to find some of these things in coins. And if you want to look at mine, that's okay. Just leave them in there. So they're cherished possessions for me. I enjoy using them to teach. A tape measure. Don't just talk about a meter and so on. See if you can't find an English metric tape measure. If you don't want to pass that around, lock it open so that you understand what I'm talking about. That's an extremely valuable piece of equipment if you are teaching English and metric measures. For those of you who may be teaching in Canada, may be especially important. All right? Measuring cups. Ladies, remember I told you we'd get to this thing about bakery experience. So, you all know how many teaspoons are in a tablespoon?
Three.
How many tablespoons in a cup?
16.
And so on. How about a half a cup? Hey, yeah. Those are all valuable things for teaching students. And when you teach them that kind of thing, go ahead and have them put 3 teaspoons of water into a tablespoon. Don't just tell them. Okay? Have them fill a cup twice and dump it into a pint jar. Have them dump 2 pint jars into a quart jar. And 4 quart jars into a gallon.
Let them figure it out. And they will much more quickly recall things that they have experienced.
All right, it's much easier than just firing facts at your students. A kitchen scales. You can buy one of these things at Walmart for $5 or so, and you can weigh an orange. And get one that has both grams and ounces on it so that, once again, as you're teaching English in the metric system, rather than just saying there's X amount of grams and an ounce and so on, you can show them. Right? Showing is far better than telling your students. Most of you will probably have access to a microwave or a kitchen range. Did you know that that's a tool that you can use to teach?
I will exhibit this to you by asking you, if we take two coffee cups,
and we fill one with water, and leave one empty, and stick them both in the microwave for 2 minutes, which one will become hotter?
I will not answer that. You get the microwave
yourself. All right. So, you can use those things to teach. If you're teaching dozens, I normally have an egg carton, but unfortunately during my trip to Ohio, it got smashed. Use an egg carton. It's a common thing that children are used to seeing. Use that to teach dozens and cut one in half to show them what a half a dozen looks like. All right? Use a globe.
Get used to how a globe works. It is not just a map of the world. You can use it, for example, to teach about the Earth and the Moon. Okay? And how they all work with the Earth spin and so on.
Become familiar with your globe. And wall maps, if you're going to use them. Gentlemen, if you're teaching scales, scale models and so on, please ask someone in the church for a blueprint and bring it to school. This is far better than letting your students use the one in the textbook. Okay. Tell them this is a real blueprint. This is a house. And so on. Tools of your trade. How many of you did any woodworking? So how many of you ladies did some cleaning? Maybe you had some squeegees or whatever, special tools. You can bring those along to school and use them to teach. A squeegee is an excellent example of a lever and so on. And the mechanical advantage you get with that. If you use a quick square, bring one along to school. Use it to teach. If you rode horses, bring a bit. And so on. If you were an electrician, go ahead and wire up a little circuit for your 30 students. And plug it in and show them that that's how it works. And they can see all the parts and watch it work. And do any of you have any fantastic collections? Anybody collect arrowheads? No? Somebody does? Bring it to school. Show your students. And tell them about how they were made. Ladies, if you have a pin collection, I don't know, whatever you might have, bring it along and talk about it. Those are things that you may have that are already primed for you. I already talked to you about animals you might have had access to. Children relate very well to pets. If you had a pet frog, to tell your students about your pet frog and how it changed from an egg into a tadpole into a frog and so on. Okay, those are valuable things. Once again, you are not inexperienced at life, and God has been preparing you for this fall. Okay? You are not totally inexperienced. Any other objects that I should have mentioned? I'm sure there's more. Didn't even talk about all the ones that I have up here. Any others that you use, Conrad or Jonathan? Not really? We'll keep moving. Locations. You're all going to be teaching school somewhere. Okay. Your schoolroom is up to a point going to be an expression of yourself. Use it as such. Make it character building. Whatever you put on your walls. Your schoolroom should be, I like to say, Christian at a glance. Now, I told you that a room can't be a Christian, but people should be able to walk into your schoolroom when no one is there and immediately tell be able to tell that this is a room where people serve God. They learn about God. And His name is lifted up. Okay? Don't leave any doubt in anyone's mind. Your schoolroom should be Christian at a glance. Your school building is useful. You can use it to teach things like shapes. Even little children can learn about triangles, squares, rectangles. At the sidewalk outside, you might be able to find some trapezoids or whatever. You can find the surface area of your school building, the volume of a school building, the volume of a room like this. And if everyone breathes 7 quarts of air per minute, how long it takes for us to breathe all the air, and then we're rebreathing it. You know, so interesting things like that, right? Your playground. What shape is a ball field? Diamond. Part of it is, right?
Bases are shaped like this. Are these right angles on a ball field? So is that a diamond? I'll let you discuss that among yourselves. But as I recall, ball fields are actually shaped like this. All right? And then you tell your children that that is a tee. So we play on the tee.
So up to a point, we're always playing tee ball. Right? All right. The great outdoors. Well, now, during my first year of teaching, we were outside playing volleyball. And I had been talking to my students about sun dogs and how moisture in the upper atmosphere produces a sun dog. And I was going to serve the ball, and I tossed it up into the air. And as my eyes were tracking this volleyball going up, I realized that we had a perfect, completely circular sun dog around the sun. It was almost precisely noon. And I yelled, "Sun dog!" And all my students looked up. And we were all staring at this sun dog. And about that time, the volleyball came back down. And I was leaning back so far, it hit me on the forehead. And then I got to demonstrate to them the force of gravity. But use the great outdoors. They are there for you to use. For example, in the near future, if you go out after dark, you should be able to see the Perseid meteor showers. Tell your students about things like that. They peak on August the 12th, which I believe is coming right up here. Local land features. Some of you may be teaching in areas where there are named hills and valleys and rivers and so on. You can use those. Talk about rock formations and so on that are in your area. If your area has sandstone, talk to your students about sandstone. If it's like our area and you have granite, tell them about granite. Okay. Local water features. I enjoyed hearing Bing talk about a dam this morning. We just recently had a dam that almost blew in our area, the Orville Dam. And what was interesting to me is that it was also the overflow, and there was a little leak. We knew about it for 7 years, and nobody did anything. And they said that to fix it, it would have cost $1 million. So they didn't fix it for 7 years. And when it finally blew, it cost nearly $1 billion to fix what they could have fixed with $1 million. A little bit of procrastination going on there. So the dwelling place. Everyone lives somewhere, right? You can use your students' dwelling to teach them. For example, we're going to teach you all about a scented skeleton. Now, scented skeleton, not everything is the same. So imagine the verb as being like the bed in your bedroom. It's the biggest thing. It's the most important part of a scented skeleton. And the noun is like your dresser. Right? It's big, but it's not quite as big as the bed. Right? And your students start picturing their own bedroom. And when they hop into bed that night, it's a verb. And they get their socks out of the noun. And so on. That's okay, but use things that are familiar to them, and those are mind pictures that can help them understand things. And use a place that you can go to be quiet. Teachers need some quiet time. Whether it's at the place where you stay, whether it's behind your schoolhouse, or there's a shady tree. I will tell you there's going to be a need for you to find some peace and quiet sometimes. Use that location to help you. God has provided a quiet place, I think, already for you. Find it and meet Him there. Our takeaway again for today is to you. Can you fill in the blank?
Use your God-given resources.
Has God given you resources? I hope you are firmly convinced that He has. Very good. Thank you for your attention. You're dismissed.